As was mentioned during the announcements, we have a number of our members who are out of town visiting in other places, as well as some who are sick. And so we are very grateful for the fact that there are several who are visiting with us today. We want you to know that's an encouragement to us. We appreciate the fact that you're here. That's one of the things about the vacation season. We sometimes miss our own members, but we have opportunity to either meet other Christians, those who visit with us, or we have the special joy of seeing people we haven't seen in a while. And it's sure good to see Sister Goodwin with us again today, and we miss Thelma greatly when she's away from us, but she's back to see us for the day, and we appreciate very much the fact that we've had opportunity to see her because we've missed her greatly. This morning in my lesson, I want to talk about what it means to be a real man. It's a very important lesson because society just doesn't get it. And I think we could say the same thing, whether it be a real man or a real woman. And by the way, some of the things that we're going to look at with regard to the characteristics of a real man, one who is a man as God would have him be, some of those same characteristics would be likewise applicable to women. So there is much to be gained from a lesson such as this from both the man and the woman. But I want to spend just some time talking about that and introduce our study by going to the 15th Psalm, Psalm 15, where the psalmist says, "Lord, who may abide in your tabernacle? Who may dwell in your holy hill? He who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart. He who does not backbite with his tongue, nor do evil to his neighbor, nor does he take up a reproach against his friend, in whose eyes a vile person is despised, but he honors those who fear the Lord. He who swears to his own hurt and does not change, he who does not put out his money at usury, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent, he who does these things shall never be moved." You'll notice in the description that is given, and again, many of these things are as applicable to women as men. But we're talking about one who is faithful to the Lord. And I would like to begin our lesson this morning by establishing what I think is the fundamental truth of the lesson, and one I would like you to heed and consider. And that is a true man, that is an individual who is a man that is as a man should be. The personification of manliness is something that is defined by God rather than men. As God is our creator, he is the one who has designed us. He is the one who has established our purpose and position. It is right for him to determine what manliness is, what being a true man is. And all you have to do is look at our society and you see that it's a far cry, very different from what is defined in passages such as these. Look again concerning the man who has that ability to abide in the tabernacle of God. It's an individual who is upright, an individual who works righteousness and is truthful. Verse 3, an individual who is not a gossip or one who backbites, one who does not treat his neighbor in an evil way. An individual who not only upholds good, that which is right, but who, as verse 4 says, despises a vile person. That's, by the way, not an indication that we should hate the sinner, but it is an indication that those who cause trouble and who are destructive to mankind is one that we would oppose rather than support. And instead, we're told he honors those who fear the Lord. An individual who is faithful with regard to his promise, an individual who does not seek to take advantage of others, and the monetary advantage is something that is emphasized in the fifth verse. All of these individuals, or all of these characteristics, make up, if they are indeed characteristic in a man, one who could be said to be a man of God. Again, as this is a more general text, this initial text, one is certainly as applicable to women in the congregation as it is with regard to men. God looks for godly men in a wicked world. The Christian man is, by definition, God's man in today's world. So we're going to be talking about what God expects of us today as Christians and how we're to conduct ourselves, how we're to act, what constitutes a godly man before God today. And again, what we want to emphasize is that it's possible for us to be fooled into believing what the world believes as defining what a real man is, because it's very different than what God's man is. And just give you a few examples of what the world looks at when they talk about a real man. It seems like it's interesting when you talk about finally being a man that often that is surrounded by the idea of now being of legal age to get drunk or to imbibe in alcohol or to perhaps go and to gamble. I remember a number of times talking with my children concerning their friends who celebrated their birthday by going across the border up into from Texas up into Oklahoma so that they could finally gamble as an adult at a casino, and that was a big deal to them. It's important to them. Now look what I can do. Look at the liberties I have because now I am an adult. And the idea of having the legal ability to make such decisions, to engage in what constitutes sinful practices, various aspects of immorality, well, that's something that is very important to a lot of people. It is considered a rite of passage in our society. And that truly is, I think, a sad commentary on the type of country that we have and the type of society in which we live today. There are other individuals, when they talk about a man, they're talking about an individual who is characterized by physical strength. They're talking about his physical prowess or physical person. And when you talk about manliness, often it has to do with power. It has to do with might. It has to do with the ability to impose your will upon others. That's often been characterized as a manly thing. It is true that when you see that in, for example, the business world, again, in our society, it is something that is characterized by testosterone. It is something that is lauded. But you may also be aware of the fact that if a woman acts in that way, very aggressive with regard to business or seeks to dominate in some way, that she is often spoken of in derisive terms as it being inappropriate because, after all, she is a woman. Well, it's likewise inappropriate for a man to consider manliness as being something along those lines. We do want to separate this idea of seeking to be dominant and domineering, whether it be the physical prowess or position you hold, with a different concept of valor and strength. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, what it means to truly have valor and the type of strength that God would have us to exhibit as men as we continue in our discussion. And then there are others that will use other basic character traits or things that are appealing that constitute manliness, whether it be the accumulation of wealth or a certain amount of machismo or something along those lines that define what a man is in our society. Well, this is superficial, very much so. It is very similar to that admonition that is given to the woman to let your adornment be not merely outward, but rather let it be the hidden person of the heart. A gentle and quiet spirit is the proper adornment for a woman. So we're talking about internal characteristics that characterize a man as God would have him to be, and what we might define as indeed a real man. I want to go, first of all, to 1 Kings, the second chapter, and make note of the first three verses of this account. As David charged his son Solomon as he neared the end of his life, I want you to notice what he said as he drew near that he should die in verse 2. He said to his son Solomon, "I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man. Keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn." I would assert to you that this is a good description given here of what it means to be a real man. And in fact, it is stated in these terms: prove yourself to be a man. So he calls him to strength, as indicated verse 2. But also, he indicates where that strength should lie. It has nothing to do with physical strength. It has nothing to do with domination. It has more to do with strength of character, with backbone, with valor, with virtue. These are the things that make a real man, or at least one who is real or acceptable or valid in the sight of God. So there are several things we want to make note of, which constitute what God would call his man, and a true man in the sense as defined by the Almighty. The first one is the fact that he is strong in faith. And I think that's intimated in the text of 1 Kings chapter 2. There's another passage I want you to remember from Joshua, the first chapter. You'll remember that the book of Joshua begins with a charge that Jehovah God made to him, to the man Joshua, who was the new leader of Israel after the death of Moses. And as he concludes that charge in verse 9, he says, "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." I want you to understand, first of all, that when we talk about God's man, what constitutes a real man, is that he recognizes that he has a helper. The Apostle Paul said, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." When we say helper, we're not saying that in the sense of one who is in a position of subservience, but rather simply one who assists us as we seek to do what is right. And it is commonly so that individuals despair with regard to righteousness, with regard to service of God, with regard to the charge that God has given them, that they feel that they are not able to accomplish those things. And when that happens, it often is because they are not fully trusting in God, recognizing that if God gives a charge, that God gives the ability to fulfill that responsibility, to heed in his words, that to recognize that indeed you have the capability to accomplish what you are charged to do. And Joshua had a very, very heavy burden. Moses had gotten them to the border of the promised land. But there is a generation that had wandered in the wilderness awaiting the time when they would have the promise fulfilled. Fully recognized that the fulfillment of that promise was contingent upon their taking the land. It's going to be necessary that they dominate the people or the inhabitants of Canaan militarily, that battles be fought and won so that the land could be occupied. Command of God, of course, initially was to drive out and utterly destroy the indigent peoples because their evil was great and complete. Joshua was the commander. He was the general of the army. It was going to be his responsibility to lead the people into the promised land, to fight those battles, to win that war so that they may inhabit the land that God had given. It was a heavy burden that he had. So he called him to courage, to be strong. But he also called him to faith. It is faith that is the font of that courage, that steadfastness. He did not need to be dismayed, no matter how powerful the people of the land may seem to be. There was no reason for fear in the recognition that God would be with them through the entirety of this time. And so if we indeed have faith, we can recognize and understand that with God's help, we can accomplish whatever it is that he desires us to do, to be whatever it is he desires us to be. And so faith is, first of all, an important consideration in being God's man. 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 13, he says, "Watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong." In fact, if you look at the King James Version of the text, it is, "Quit ye like men." In other words, behave as a man. These are the characteristics that indeed are often associated with males, with men. Bravery and strength and valor. And it has, though the application is right and appropriate with regard to physical prowess because of testosterone and because of the strength of men as compared with women in general. The fact is that this has much to do with a man's spiritual standing and his makeup and very little to do with physical valor. But what he's saying is act like a man should act with regard to leadership. act like a man should act with regard to the conviction that you're to hold and the virtue and courage that is to be present as you seek to live for God. To recognize the importance of being a watchman, of taking care, to watch out for the adversary, the devil that walks about as a roaring lion. Or using the imagery that is found in Ephesians the 6th chapter, as we're to put on the whole armor of God, that we do so that we may withstand the fiery darts of the wicked one who allays himself as our enemy in our service to the Master. And so again, it is something that is important for God's men to be men indeed of faith. Continuing on in that description in 1 Kings the 2nd chapter is the charges made from David to his son Solomon. The idea of obedience is established in the text in chapter 2 and verse 3. He says, "Keep the charge of the Lord your God to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, and his testimonies as it is written in the law of Moses." So there was the call. And again, do remember that Solomon was the king of Israel at this time. Solomon was taking over the throne from his father David and would take it at his death. And so there was the need for him to heed the charge of God that he might lead the people correctly. You look in the Old Testament and the annals of the kings, the chronicles of the kings, you will find that not only did Solomon fail in that effort eventually, but that in every succeeding generation, as other kings took the throne, that they failed as well. That idolatry creeped into the worship of Israel. And because the kings were not good leaders and acting as men should act with regard to obedience to the master, it led the people astray. You remember the charge of Joshua after the land had been inhabited, and as they were considering the future that they had as a people, as it was late in Joshua's life as well. And he said, "You're going to have to choose this day whom you will serve. The gods that you served on the other side of the river, or the gods in which land you dwell." But he said, "As for me and my house, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Joshua was faithful with regard to what God required of him because he demanded not only faithfulness of himself, but also faithfulness in his family. I want you to understand, men of the congregation, how important it is for you to be obedient. You cannot be the type of father and husband that God would have you be unless you are serving him first of all. We are to walk in his ways, keep his statutes and his commandments. Our authority certainly does not extend, as it did in Solomon's case, to a kingdom. But within the parameters of God's call for us to be head of the home and lords in our house, it is important that we recognize he must be put first. Obedience to God is paramount. In Matthew chapter 7, in verses 24 and 25, we are told that whoever hears the sayings of Jesus and does them will be a wise man. He built his house on the rock. The rain descended, the floods came, the winds blew and beat on the house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. Now, I do want to again emphasize, as you can see, as we look at these various characteristics of a man of God, that they are likewise applicable to the women, the congregation. But having said that, I do want you to understand that such obedience is especially important because of the position that men hold. The position of authority that is held in the church, for example, as well as in the home. And the damage that can be done if men are not men of faith. In fact, you see so many families that are destroyed spiritually because though the woman, the wife, the mother is doing her best to serve God and to be faithful, the man undermines all of that because he is not faithful in his service to the master. And so men, true men, are men who will be faithful to God. The third point along these lines is the idea of responsibility. And again, I take you to chapter 2 and at verse 3 when it says to keep the charge of the Lord your God. Now, the charge is stated as being obedient to Him in every sense. But it is a charge. And I want you to recognize the importance of being faithful with regard to a charge that is given. And this would have application not only with regard to the charge given by God, but the charge or responsibility that you have in all of the relationships that you sustain. God expects you, for example, as you work for an employer, to be faithful to the charge or the responsibility that He has given to you. The relationship we sustain with the civil government, as Romans chapter 13 indicates, which is a relationship of submission to the governing authorities and obeying the laws of the land, would likewise be a responsibility that you have to be, again, keeping the charge, being responsible in the relationships you sustain with others. And this is a charge that God gives us, something that is required of us. He wants us to be dependable. He wants us to be individuals who keep our word and do as we say that we'll do. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4, in verses 1 through 2, it is described as stewardship. You'll notice, again, with regard to the relationship we sustain with God, in verses 1 and 2, Paul says, "Let a man so consider us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mystery of God." You think about the Apostle Paul and his steadfastness in fulfilling his responsibility. First of all, his motivation: "As much as is in me, I am ready to preach the gospel." The fact that despite various persecutions, and you can read a litany of such persecutions in the 11th chapter of 2 Corinthians, as he talks about all of the things that he had suffered for Christ, and yet he was steadfast and he did what was required of him because he understood the concept of stewardship. And what is that concept? Very simply put, it is required in stewards that one be found faithful. Now, a steward is a servant. A steward is one who is put over the affairs of a household, for example. You have a master who has hired an individual to take care of his concerns. Now, what kind of an individual? If I were to have the money and wherewithal to hire someone for that purpose, I'm going to, because I'm busy in my life and because I have maybe requirements in business or I have certain responsibilities, I'm going to hire someone to take care of my finances, to take care of my household, to take care of the domestic circumstances. And I'm going to hire him to deal with those things so that I don't have to concern myself about them. Well, what kind of individual am I going to want to hire? Well, I just said I want to hire an individual to take care of those things for me so that I will not be bothered with them, so that I won't have to constantly be looking out for those things myself, to keep an eye on the checkbook or to keep an eye on the finances or the household matters. I'm going to hire someone else to do that. Well, the thing that is needed is a faithful individual, an individual that you can trust. And that's the concept that we have here. Do you remember Joseph? As he was taken into Egyptian bondage, and he was given to a man by the name of Potiphar, and he was so well respected by that man that he became the head over his entire household, and he could be trusted, even to the point where when the man's wife sought to seduce him because of that position of responsibility, he was unwilling to consider it and fled and ran away from such seduction because he was faithful. He could be trusted. That's the kind of individual that we're talking about here. That is truly a man of God, a man who could be trusted, who is indeed responsible. Or using, again, the next verse in 1 Kings, the second chapter, the concept of being honorable. Notice here that he calls for this obedience. He calls for this steadfastness, this stewardship, so that the Lord may fulfill His word which He spoke concerning me, saying, "If your sons take heed to their way, to walk before me in truth with all their heart and with all their soul," He said, "you shall not lack a man on the throne of Israel." Now, I want you to think about this. When we talk about honor, this concept of walking before God in truth with all your heart and with all your soul. With all your heart and all your soul. It is a matter of honor. It's an interesting thing when you look at Hollywood. They often will use the concept of honor with regard to the military because it is such a high ideal. It serves as a tremendous dramatic device, and certainly so. When we consider the military, individuals who serve with honor, we recognize that there have been many instances and circumstances where those who serve as soldiers have failed to serve with honor. But there is no greater appellation that can be given, no greater praise that a soldier is worthy of than to be said that he served with honor. That is, there was integrity that was present. He was a man of his word, that the ideals that he was trained to, the oath that he took as he became a member of the military, that ideal and that oath is something that he held sacred and that he sought to perform with all of his heart, with all of his soul. Honor is a big thing. It is an important thing before God. And as we seek to serve Him, men, we need to serve with all our heart and with all of our soul. As the psalmist said in the 51st Psalm in verse 10, "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me." That is what we are called to, a clean heart, a pure heart, one who is indeed honorable. And so we want to, by conclusion, emphasize again the importance of finding real men among God's people. But to recognize again that the definitions that are given in society as to what constitutes a real man is not what God describes a real man as being. In Jeremiah chapter 5 and verse 1, instructions are given in that state, that dire state of Israel at that time, that had declined into evil, where the prophet lamented the sinful condition of God's people. The prophet was given instruction to run to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem, to see now and know and seek in her open places if you can find a man. If you can find a man. What kind of man does God want? See, not just any man. He's not telling the prophet to go and find a man, any man, but rather find a particular man, a kind of man. The kind of man that he calls him to find is one who executes judgment, who seeks truth. God's pardon upon a people was based upon finding such a man of honor, a man of integrity, a man of obedience, a man who fulfills the promises that he has made before God, a good steward, one who is righteous and obedient to him. That's the type of man who's a good man. And we have movie stars that are set up as the example of virility, masculinity, and manhood. I've always thought that kind of peculiar, the way it has gone some today, because there have been some changes in that. You know, what do we say is really a man? Well, John Wayne, that's kind of a generation ago, isn't it? And there are certain things about John Wayne that I'm sure are laudable and that we could emulate. And certainly the characters he played, there was some laudable things. But there is a lot about John Wayne. He was mean in a lot of his movies, wasn't he? A little brusque, uncaring, unkind. And you have individuals like that. Maybe in the 1980s it was Tom Selleck. And Justin Bieber. I don't know. I think maybe there have been some changes here in regard to what men think. But that's the world's idea of what constitutes a man. And it's not how much hair is on the chest or how big the muscles are or how you can bully someone. It's none of that. It has to do with obedience and righteousness and goodness. That's what a godly man is. And that's what God is looking for. Now, Israel had too few of those men. And God judged them. Our nation today has too few of those men. Unless we are able to raise men up to be good husbands and fathers, raise men up to be elders among God's people, gospel preachers and deacons in the church, unless we're able to raise men up who, because they are examples to their children, because they're diligent in obedience to God, because they have valor and courage to where they will stand up and do what is right, are honorable men, who are men of their word, then I am worried about what will happen to our society and to the church in our generation. Those are the type of men that are needed. Fathers, raise your sons to be that type of man. Mothers, do what you can in the same regard to raise them up to be men. Not a man's man, but God's man. To recognize the difference between the two. We need men in the Lord's church. We need men at the heads of their families. We need men in our society who are steadfast and obedient to God, because that's what a real man is. I'm going to offer an invitation at this time, hopeful that some of the things that we've talked about this morning have been beneficial and helpful to you, understanding the responsibility that men have. And again, just so that the women will not feel left out, a lot of those things, valor and courage and strength of conviction, obedience to God, putting God first in your lives, are likewise important for the women. So consider these things, and if anything will benefit you in application, then be sure to add those things to your character that you may be pleasing to God. I'm going to offer an invitation at this time, not knowing the hearts of any. It may be that you're here this morning and desirous of beginning a Christian walk. If we can assist you in that, we offer ourselves to you. That's what the invitation is for. We don't know your heart, but it may be that there is one who desires to respond to the invitation call today, repenting of their sin, desirous of confessing before those assembled this day that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and submit in obedience to His will by being baptized to have their sins washed away. We offer you that opportunity, and if we can help you, or if there is anyone else in the congregation that we can assist in some spiritual way, we offer the invitation now and ask that you come. While together we stand, while we sing.